Welcome back to Unicorns Do Exist, a podcast where we turn our pain into power, reclaim our magic, and remind every woman listening that their comeback story is already written in the stars. Today's guest, I'm super excited because she's a whole unicorn in human form. She's an Italian Bengali woman living in Montreal, a corporate finance professional, a mentor, blogger, YouTuber, self-published author, and speaker, and the co-chair of Women in Leadership.
Yay!
She's embodied what happens when women decide they will no longer shrink and instead become a force. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me, Vanessa.
I'm super excited to get to know you and hopefully learn how to be more diverse as yourself with all these amazing things that you do. One of the questions I want to ask everybody when we start is, what makes you a unicorn?
That's a very good question. Honestly, I think every single person is a unicorn. I think it's just up to us to really discover ourselves and to find out the power that we have. And I think like not many people do that kind of work, like the self-reflection, the personal growth type of work to really discover every bit of ourselves. And I think that I did enough work to really find out a little bit about who I am as a person, the person that I want to be in the future, the person that I want to represent in the world. And so I think that's why I'm a unicorn. I think every single one of us, it's the unique in our own ways. It's just about finding out the value that we can bring to the world.
The way I put it is your magic. Everyone has their magic inside them. You just have to find it. And a lot of times life will want to hide that from yourself, but you got to do the work. Oh, yes. I love it. It's awesome. Exactly. So you come from a multicultural background, so Italian and Bengali. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, okay. So basically, I was born and raised in Italy, and both of my parents are from Bangladesh. And so that's what makes me a third culture kid. I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of third culture kid. Basically, it's someone who has spent most of their development years in a country or in a culture completely different from their parents' homeland. So that's how it makes me a third culture kid. And I have lived most of my life in Italy. However, I always felt like I was not fitting in. It was a struggle that I went through as a person. So there is an actual definition for it. You can search it up on Wikipedia. You can also find out more about it through books. And there is a community of people that are called third culture kids. We're very similar in the sense that we all have multiple ethnicity. And for me, one of the struggles was basically trying to fit in because I grew up in such a Western society and I went to like an Italian school. All of my friends were Italian. I was always very self-aware that I did not look like anyone else around me. But when I went home, even though like it was predominantly a Bengali household, I also felt like I did not fit in there as well, because even though I look Bengali externally, inside of me, I felt I was very Western in a way. So I always went through that struggle of like fitting in, not feeling like I was enough. And so I wrote a book where I talk about that, my experience being a third culture kid from the point of view of a South Asian woman and how I navigated those two worlds into a life who basically was able to find my identity and embrace the beauty that each culture offers.
What was the moment that in your life where you realized that there was a difference, but that difference gave you a sense of power?
You know what? It came really late in my life. Really late. I think for all this time, I always thought that having multiple ethnicity was actually my weakness, because people would ask me questions such as, where are you from? Or where is your home? And I always like hesitated a little bit when it came to those answers, because I don't have one specific home. I grew up in many different parts of Italy. I moved from Italy to UK. Now I'm in Canada. And when I moved to Canada, I think that's what made it even worse. That feeling of like not belonging anywhere made it worse, because people questioned my origins and where I was from. And I think after having few conversations with like close friends, people that were similar to me, I got that aha moment. where I realized that me carrying two cultures, it means that I can speak two different languages. It means that I can have two different visions of the world. It means that I can eat two different kinds of cuisine. So it was really late in my life that I had that moment where I realized that me having two cultures is my superpower. It's my strength, and I have to use it at my own advantage.
Yes, definitely. And I have a question. Did you start speaking Bengali at home first? Is that your primary language? Yes.
And yes. Yeah.
Okay. So for me, I say my parents are from Mexico, both of them, but I was born in California. And so at home, we spoke Spanish. And I remember thinking my entire life in Spanish and counting in Spanish and like dreaming in Spanish until middle school. Did you have something like that where you remember switching in your brain?
No. So for me, it was a bit different. Basically, my parents taught me how to speak Bengali. But the moment I went to school, like elementary school, that's the moment where I started to like bring Italian at home. So it happened at a quite like early age. Indeed, at home, we were speaking two languages, mainly Italian and Bengali. And with my sister, it was strictly Italian. With my parents, it was Bengali with a mix of Italian. But I always counted in Italian. I always like taught in Italian. That's why I always say Italian is my adopted mother tongue.
And you said you have sisters. Are you like the youngest, the oldest?
I'm the oldest. I have one younger sister. Yeah.
Nice. I'm the oldest. And I didn't speak English at home until my sister was old enough to speak English with me, because it was literally just us. All my aunts and uncles and grandparents, they all spoke Spanish. And now that I have a son, I'm teaching him how to speak Spanish, right? And at home, I just speak Spanish to him. But I attach myself like not knowing Spanish words. So I'm like, how am I teaching this kid Spanish? I don't even know Spanish anymore. So
I have a question for you. Do you know how to read or write in Spanish?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you learned it the proper way.
Yes. Honestly, I don't remember them teaching us Spanish, but I know it. I know that my mom taught me how to read and write. I do know, though, I was always in Spanish, English as a second language classes up to third grade. So it was like, I think they call it ELS. And finally, in third grade, my mom was like, no, put her in all English because she's behind. Like, I was behind reading in English and I was behind in writing in English.
Okay.
And so my mom was like, now she needs to learn English because I already knew Spanish. And so that was very challenging for me. That was really hard.
I get it. With my parents, it was a bit different. They taught me how to speak Bengali. And my mom was trying to teach me how to read and also learn the alphabet. Then what happened is, of course, like my school took over. So I was only focusing on like whatever I was taught at school. And I kind of like lost it when it came to like reading and stuff like that. I knew how to read it, but then I lost it. And in a way, sometimes I regret that I did not learn Bengali properly. Honestly, I do regret it because I feel like I only know how to speak it, but I don't know how to write it. I don't know how to read it. I would have loved if I learned it like in a proper way. I feel like it's, I know how to speak it, but it's not perfect.
Yeah. For me now, I say it's a blessing. Like you said, that when learning when I was younger, my dad was very strict. We used to go to travel to Mexico once a year. And the moment we crossed the border, like we could not say one word in English once we crossed the border. If we did, we would get in trouble. We would get in trouble. And so that, I think, immersing ourselves in visiting Mexico once a year, that really helped. But now that I'm older, my sisters, so I, like I said, I'm the oldest. My two sisters read it and write it better than I do. I think my two brothers who are young, they're like the youngest. I believe they know how to speak it. I believe they know how to read it. I'm not sure if they know how to write it. I think the 15-year-old, he learned how to write it because of his girlfriend. He had her ex now, but maybe you can still learn. I mean, it's never too late. I feel like I'm relearning Spanish with my son, like certain words.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, that and it's I don't your use. Heritage. It's your heritage, you know. It's good to keep that, and it's good to preserve that.
I'm really glad that I'm doing this, like as well. I do sometimes see him confused, where he's like, we go to like a kid's playground, and he's the only one that doesn't understand what the kids are saying. And I feel a little bad in a sense, but then I remember, oh, you're going to be fine. You're going to get it later. Like you're going to, and then his other mom only speaks English to him. So I'm like, he's gonna be okay. He picks and chooses what words he likes. So, because he'll say the color red in Spanish, so he'll say rojo, but then he'll say the color yellow, he'll say yellow. He won't say amarillo.
I get it. Yeah.
So
Yeah,
it's cute.
it's not that easy. Yeah.
But you also said you have a you do self-branding, like personal growth and self-branding. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I do a lot of things that are related to my own personal growth. Like I like to believe in the idea that we are our biggest asset and that we should take time to invest in ourselves. And I did not realize that by investing in myself, I established an online presence. I think I also established my own brand too. Like when people like look me up, they know what I stand for, you know, women in leadership, a woman in finance, a woman who loves boxing. Like I feel like I unconsciously did that. That's what happened as I started to get out of my comfort zone. And I do love the idea of trying new things. Very adventurous, and that's how I like to describe myself. Like I'm always like in the search for the next thing. I always want to try things, and I love learning. I think that there is never an end to learning. I think we can continue learning for the rest of our lives. So I take classes. I'm always like reading books, listening to podcasts, trying different things. Like I'm gonna go next week into like a soap making workshop. Like I like to really get outside of that comfort zone and try the unthinkable, basically. That's the kind of person I am. Yeah.
Are you an Aquarius by any chance? When's your birthday?
No, I'm not an Aquarius.
I was gonna
I'm
say, because
not.
that sounds like a typical Aquarius that is just.
I'm not.
When's your
I'm
birthday?
making it's in August. I'm Leo. I'm a proud
You're a
Leo.
Leo. Oh,
I'm a proud Leo.
that's awesome. Okay, my mom's a Leo. I'm an Aquarius, but
Okay.
in a sense, for me, it's I get bored easily. And so I'm like, what's next? What's next? What's next? But it also makes me learn so many things, like the podcast, fitness, and all that. I just want to learn something. Dancing, anything that I can learn, I will do it.
Yeah,
That's why.
I'm very into like creative stuff and making things and seeing the results of my creation. I'm very much into those things. Like a few weeks ago, I invited a friend and we made like homemade gnocchi. I don't make pasta at home. Usually, like I typically buy it, but we made like homemade food. And I like to tap into those things, even though I might not be good, even though the outcome might not be good. But I like the idea of trying, and I easily get bored as well. Like I always have to do something.
Well, that's why I feel like that's what life is. You have to keep trying. I know some people, when I was younger, some people would tell me, like, pick something and stick to it, pick something and stick to it. But I'm like, imagine doing that for 40, 50 years. I'm like, that sounds, to me, that sounds horrible and it sounds so boring. Like, you're never evolving, you're never growing. I could never. And I thought there was something wrong with me for not being able to just pick one thing and stick to it. And so I would blame my ADHD and I would blame all these things. And eventually I was like, you know what? No, there's nothing wrong with me. There's something wrong with you. I had to switch that in my mind so I could feel confident of wanting to do things, of wanting to try new stuff and not ashamed of it. Because I feel like a lot of women feel ashamed.
Yes, I know. And does it ever happen to you that someone is telling you, oh, you're doing too much? So is there a moment where like you sit down and do nothing because I really cannot keep up with the things that you're doing? Does anyone ever tell you this?
Yeah, my ex would tell me, find something and stick to it. And I tried it and I would just be like, okay, so now what do I do? Like just sit there like, this isn't for me.
Exactly. No, we're meant to be doing things and creating stuff and, you know, making an impact. That's how I like to believe it.
And I love it now. My ex has been doing her same job for, I'm gonna say, 18 years. And she like that's her thing, and that's awesome. She loves it. And for the people that can do that, like I admire them. But before they would make me feel bad, kind of thing. Now it's like, hey, you, that's great for you. This is great for me. Like there's nothing wrong with me either. And understanding that really gave me the permission to like try like the podcast, like do more things, like get myself out of that shell and be pushed beyond your comfort zone. So.
That's it. And I think there's a lot of fulfillment in that. And I think also not everyone is supposed to be following the conventional path when it comes to career. Like you can go to do something different, or you can, what I call, like it's an integration of both, you know, like you have in the morning your 9 to 5 where you might want to do that for the rest of your life, and then you have the 5 to 9, which I like to call it 5 to 9, where you get to dedicate your time towards creating stuff and doing the things that you love. And I think it's important to have that kind of integration, because it brings a lot of fulfillment and satisfaction, even though maybe for some of them you're not getting paid, and maybe some people think, okay, that's crazy that you're doing all of this, but I think it's worth exploring that.
Yeah, I like how you said it. It's your creative outlook. It's what keeps you, it keeps you like your joy inside you, so that you can do your 9 to 5 with a smile on your face, without feeling drained or burnt out, like a lot of people say. I had a question that I think is really good. What is something you had to unlearn about success in order to grow into the version of yourself?
Something that I had to unlearn is that you get to decide on the definition of success, and that success is very subjective. Like when it comes to like defining the word success, it's very, very subjective. I used to think that there was one definition of success, which is you finish school, start working, get this promotion, make high salary, buy that house, buy that car. But then I was like, no. That's not success. This is what all generations told us. You know, they told us this is what the definition of success is. Now I like to believe that success is what you feel is
Nice.
right for you, and it's what makes you happy. I think that's what it is. I think success is really related to this whole concept of happiness and fulfillment and satisfaction.
Yes, because there's so many people that have the house and have the money and have the car, but they're so lonely and honestly
And
miserable.
miserable.
Someone came to say hi. You're a speaker and a mentor also for other women, right? What would be your advice for a woman who had an idea of what her life would be? Like the house, the baby, and out of nowhere, it's just gone. How can they rebrand themselves? Or what would be your advice for them to, well, they have to start over. They're starting over.
Yeah, I think it's all about the concept of like reinventing yourself. And I always have this conversation with a lot of other women, and I think it's never too late to restart. And you can restart from where you are right now. It's really about tweaking some parts of your life and having that awareness that, you know, having a house is not always everything. Having a car is not always having everything. And I think you have to do a lot of an inner work, where you can really start to realize what's more important for you in your life and how you can prioritize those things. And I think that when you are basically talking with other women and having conversation, this is where the whole mentoring element comes in. I think you start to have like ideas in your mind on how you can like rechange that, how you can change the focus in your life. And I think it's important, because as a woman, I feel like sometimes we're so stuck into that whole definition of success that we have to just have it all done, you know, being perfect for our family, making sure that everyone is happy. But sometimes we forget that we are also human beings, and it's okay to like be compassionate towards ourselves. And it's also okay to, you know, take a break and reinvent ourselves. And I think talking with trusted people and sharing your ideas and having people that are actually cheering for you, I think it's a way that you can start taking like start making changes. And it just has to start with a very small step. It doesn't have to be anything major. It's just tiny small steps. Start from there and then see where that brings you.
Comfort zone. I think community makes a huge part in that, especially for the woman that, like, for example, you were just at home and that was your job and that's all you did. Now you gotta go and find, like you said, new hobbies, new people, a new little tribe. Yesterday I went to a women's business empowerment kind of thing. Like, it's like a mixer. And I've never done that before. I was always very like scared to even leave my house sometimes. But I have a friend and I see her going here and going there and like meeting all these people, and she's just like a little bumblebee because she has a goal. And seeing her do that kind of was like, oh, I can do that. It's okay to do that. It's not a bad thing to do that. It's like putting yourself out there again is It feels weird because it's new, but once you just do it, it's like, oh, I wasn't that scary. They didn't eat me alive. It's like nothing's gonna happen. But you have it in your head, like, oh my God, the world's gonna end.
I was going to add something about that because I saw that story that you posted, and I had the same thought, I would say, like a few years ago, where I always wanted to go to like events, women's empowerment events, and so forth. But I was always very hesitant because I'm like, I don't know anyone. I don't know how I'm gonna network. I don't know what I'm gonna do, what I'm gonna say. But this year, like the year that is just ending, I told to myself, I did a vision board. I told to myself that this year is gonna be all about experiences and doing the things that I love. And I told myself that I'm gonna attend each month an event. And so that's what I have been doing. I've been attending a lot more women's empowerment events. And let me tell you this, it's beautiful. It's beautiful when you find people that are similar to you. Because I just feel like the energy it's just a different kind of energy. It's a very powerful energy. And I feel like with those little connection, we're already like making changes in ourselves as well. Because you going to an event and speaking to someone is getting outside of the comfort zone. And I think there is a lot of growth that comes with it, which is you have made better connection, you've worked on your communication skills, you probably made an impact by sharing some information or telling about yourself to someone else. So I think there's a lot of value that you can get from it.
Yes. And it's funny because, like I said, I'm an Aquarius. And when I go, for example, if I go to the bar, I can talk to anybody. I can strike up a conversation with anyone. And I do it all the time. But because it was me sharing my project or like business, it was a little more nerve-wracking, kind of like, am I good enough? Is my podcast good enough to share? And little did I know when I mentioned what it's about to the women, they were just like, oh my God, there's not enough girls in podcasts, and that's so cool. And my concept of it is we all have our magic inside us. We just need to find it. It's what makes us a unicorn. And so the girls were like, oh, I need to find my magic. And I was like, yes, we all have it. You can do it. And so it was a beautiful experience. It was. I made more of it in my head than what it really was. But I think that happens a lot with anything that's new.
And I'm pretty sure it was very uplifting for you as well, because you met these people and they saw this value that you have, and probably you feel much more confident now about yourself.
So it was funny because I said I would email you back, right? And I was like, oh my God, no, I don't know how to interview anybody. But you're right. After going to the event, I was like, let me get back to her. I can do this. It just reassured that I'm doing something from my heart and I'm doing it because I love it and I want to help as many people as possible as well. So yes, let's go for it. And so that's why it was so late. I'm like, I'm sorry it's so late, but yes, let's do it. Let's get it done. And so, yeah, it's the ripple effect of the energy that was there to bringing us here to hopefully doing this, many more times, because I feel like there's so many questions that I have for you, especially that can't get through them in an hour. But I want to get to know a little more about you, like why Montreal, for example.
It was for personal reasons that I have moved to Montreal. And let me tell you this, when I came to Montreal, it was literally an adventure. I had no clue about anything. Like it was such a cultural shock, especially with the weather. Like, oh my gosh, the winter, what a struggle. And even little things like, we see squirrels in the parks. It might sound stupid, but in Italy, you don't see that much squirrels in a park. Here, winter, summer, spring, you see squirrels. I got so scared when I saw squirrels the first time, like really scared. Then the other shock that I had was with coffee. Oh my gosh. Because in Canada, like even in like in the States, we drink like filter coffee. In Italy, there's no such thing as filter coffee. So that took me as a shock when I had filter coffee. I was like, what is this? Because we drink like the espresso, like one shot of espresso, and the coffee is never to go. You drink it on the spot at the, we call them bar, the coffee shop, they're
Yes.
called bar, exactly.
Like a shot or
Yeah, exactly. So for me, like there was a lot of like shocks when I came here. And then of course, like I had to, of course it's a bilingual city, so you have to navigate the city knowing both languages. So I studied in English when I went to university, and now I work in a French environment. So I find myself using two languages that were not mine to begin with.
so you understand, you speak French, English, Bengali, and Italian.
That's right. And I'm learning also Spanish.
Spanish. Yes, you just said hi to me. And yeah, that's awesome. Wow, I need to pick up my game here. I know Spanish and English, and I understand some Romanian,
Okay.
but that's about it. I mean, I feel like Italian is very similar to Spanish, so I can understand it if you speak it very slowly for me. But that's awesome, like learning all those languages.
Did you know that it's also very similar to Romania?
Oh, really? No, I didn't know that.
Yes, yes,
Yeah.
yes.
I did not know that,
So,
but there you go. Maybe I'll just stick to what all these little languages that are some familiar. For sure,
yeah.
not any Chinese yet. Not yet. And you have one sister, just one.
One
You're the
sister, one younger
oldest.
sister. Yeah, I'm the oldest.
How was it being the oldest?
A lot of, you know what? You have a lot of expectation when you are the older sister, and you have to lead by example. You have to keep up with the reputation. You always have to make sure that everything is perfect. It's a lot of pressure, let me tell you this. And I'm also the oldest on my dad's side in terms of the cousins, so I had even more pressure. And when I was growing up in the Bengali community, I was the oldest too. So imagine.
Wow, yes. Everybody was looking at you, especially from what I know, is like they're very strict and they want you to be super successful on top of it because you're the oldest in
Yeah,
everyone.
exactly. And there is a hierarchy. There's the structure, there is a hierarchy. And I remember always, like, I would hear all the aunties, we call them aunties, like, all my mom's friends always saying, oh, to their kids, okay, look at Urmi, like, she's doing all of these things, she's great. Like, I did not like that. I didn't like having other kids look at me because I felt like it was too much on them as well, that they always had to be this at the same standard as me. So I did not really like that, honestly.
Well, it's what their parents taught them and the way they think it should be, but they don't realize the amount of pressure you put on your kids. I also the oldest, and I think I rebelled against the look at your sister. So I would misbehave a little more than like the everyone else, so that they would just be like, okay, don't look at Vanessa. Don't look at her because you never know what you're gonna get. And for me, it was more like I also became like an honorary parent for my parents because in the beginning, they didn't speak English, right? And so it was like, what does this say? What does that say? Call this person, call that person, or what is your teacher talking about? Or the doctor's appointments and things like that. Like growing up, we had to do all that. Like I had to do all that for my mother
Yes.
and for my dad, or what does this letter say? And she got good at it in English. And for a period of time, she didn't need me to do it, which is kind of weird, or anyone to do it. She handled everything on her own. And I was like, yeah, cool, mom. But then out of nowhere, now she's calling again because I live closer. I think it might be that. And can you come read this letter for me? I'm like, oh, who's been reading the letters for you lately? She's like, oh, but it's easier now that you're here. So like they rely on it.
Yes, so it's the same. We had the same experience growing up. It wasn't my dad so much, it was my mom, because my mom, she was always a home, she was a housewife, she always stayed at home. And of course, she moved from Bangladesh to Italy. And what happened is she would use me and my sister as the translators. So we would go to the doctor, so we would translate things, we would go to the grocery, we would translate things. But she was quite good, even though she didn't know the language. Like, when she would go grocery, she would just say things like, how much is this? And then she would understand it. But if it was about having a conversation, she never really learned Italian. So I think what they have done, it was very courageous, like moving to a completely different country where you have no ties, you know no one, you know nothing. It's very, very courageous. But I know that they relied a lot on me and my sister to translate things. I know that when my dad would go to, let's say, the notary, he would need me to go with him because he wouldn't understand everything. So it's, yeah, I also play that kind of role.
What do you miss the most from Italy?
The food, the
There's not a lot of Italian places in, well, even I think even if there is, it's probably not authentic, right?
You know what? I'm quite lucky to say that there is a big Italian community, and I'm quite lucky to find my Italian grocery store. There's this particular store that imports food from Italy, so I'm always there to buy my food. And every time I'm going to like Little Italy or to these Italian places, my Italian side comes out. I start speaking Italian, and that's when I feel like I'm home now.
That's so cool. Ah, so you have your little stats.
Yes.
Oh, that's cute. I love it. For me, my Spanish only comes out either when I'm angry or when I'm drunk now.
Yeah, it's me when I'm angry, my whole Italian side just comes out. I'm like, it comes out better when I'm saying in Italian. You know what I mean? Like,
Yes. My ex didn't speak Spanish when I met her. So when I would ever get angry, she would just be like, I don't even know what you're saying. And then I would get me more mad because I'm like, oh, I wish you understood what I'm saying because I'm telling you off right now. But she gets things here and there. But I think it's funny. It's a good thing she didn't understand. If not, the fight for probably would be worst.
Yes, I get it.
And so your book that you published, tell me a little bit more of that. You said it's based on your.
Yeah. It's based on my childhood and teenagehood. And basically, I talk about my life in Italy and what it was for me to grow up in between two cultures. And I talk about it a lot from a perspective of a girl and a South Asian woman. And I'm talking about these little things that maybe looks not normal for people. It might look normal, but perhaps for some others not. Like, for instance, I talk about the fact that I went to elementary school, and there was a church inside the school, and there were nuns inside school, because Italy is very like Catholic, right? And back in the days, like there was a crucifix in the class, and I don't follow the same religion. And as a kid going to that, I'm like, what is this? I don't understand. So I'm talking about in the book. I talk about things such as the way we dress up. My parents were super like strict. They wanted me to be dressed in a certain way. And then I would see all of my high school friends dressed in another way. And sometimes I'm like, why can I not dress the same way? And you know, for South Asian culture, this is a big deal. It is a big deal because we have so many limitations. There are so many restrictions of what we can do, what we cannot do. Like, we do find it really hard because we want to integrate as much as possible, but at the same time, we need to think about our parents' culture and how we can, you know, maintain that, keep that going forward. So I always have to be careful about that. I'm talking about that. I talk about what it means to be the older sister and getting so much pressure from the parents. I talk about how it was for me to like spend my afternoon, meaning that I was never allowed to go out because there was a fear that I was going to become too Italian, or I would start doing things that other people do, drinking, smoking, and stuff like that. So there is that, because everything is around the perception that people get about you when it comes to, like, when you think about South Asian culture, you always have to think about what will people think. There's an actual expression, and you always have to be careful because you don't want to create a negative perception, and reputation is everything.
Think you ever rebelled from that, or are you still trying?
You know what? I was the typical obedient girl, like a typical obedient girl. I would just follow what I was being told. Sometimes I wish I was a bit more rebellious, honestly. I wish I was like that. I feel like my sister was a good rebellious. I was not. I was really following all the instructions given to me. And now I feel like that since I am in my 30s, I feel like I'm able to be more unapologetic and care less about how people are feeling, because it's not my job to take care about people's feelings. They are supposed to be taking care of themselves.
Yes. What about your parents' feelings? Do you still feel guilty for those?
For some things I do, unfortunately, I do for some things, but I also have to protect my energy at the same time.
I totally agree with that because there's certain points where I still ask my mom permission for certain things, like, and my friends look at me a little weird, like, wait, what? And I've come to understand that it's not so much of a fear. I think I want to give her that respect. So for
Yeah.
me, I had to switch it where I'm not scared of you. I could do it if I want to, but I love you and I respect you. I do limit the things I say, the way I present myself. Like you said, I went to Puerto Rico with my sister and they were dancing. They're de perreo, you know, like they're like, let's a perrear. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. Yo perrear. And I was like, I'm gonna go. And then I get there and then I see the way, like how intense it is. Like it's awesome, it's beautiful, but it was very intense. And my mom just came to my brain. And I tell my mom this all the time. I'm like, Mom, you raised me too good. She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you raised me too good because I went to Puerto Rico and you were nowhere to be seen. And I still didn't go and dance like that. And she's like, good. It's you. She's like, it's your own image, not mine. But in reality, it was like, no, my mom saw me, or if my mom found out, she would kill me. Yeah. So it's like that. I still carry that with me sometimes. And you're right. I'm like, I'm 38. And why? But I think my mom has been, she's grown with us, like with my sisters and us, that she allows us to be more independent and be ourselves. Because mm-hmm. I think the ultimate, for my family, the ultimate fuck it was me coming out, like as a lesbian. Mm-hmm. And everyone talking about it. And oh my God. And the first time I came out, my mom disowned me for say. And so mm-hmm. I went back in the closet for a little bit. And I tried, you know, I had a boyfriend and everything. But then the second right. time she saw how it affected me, that she was like, it is what it is. Like, F it. And so that allowed her to like care less about what people thought.
Good. Good.
Thank God. But I mean, it also took like correct. 10 years and time. It took time. So
yeah,
that's why I ask, the way you're taught and the things you're learned when you're a child, even after your 20s, you can't unlearn in 10 years. You can't unlearn in a weekend. Like it's a process and it's never ending. And so yeah. If I would say, try to be more rebellious.
Thanks. I try. Honestly, it's not that I try. It's like you said, there's always that guilt that you have inside, right? You want to do certain things, but then you keep thinking about your parents and you don't want to disappoint anyone. You don't want to disappoint people around you. And it's the way we're raised, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's so much pressure to us also, not being the oldest siblings, but us being a woman. I think there's so much pressure to always have to reach that level of perfectionism, you know? And I'm like, I can't do that.
What I've practiced lately, if I truly want to do this, for example, anything, like if I want to go on a date with a certain person, and maybe I have like, oh, maybe I shouldn't. My mom will say something or someone will say something. I'm like, well, am I hurting anybody? No. Anyone that's paying my bills? No. So then I kind of like question my own thought, like, is it really bad? Well, and then I answer myself, could you live with it if like my son found out? And then if the answer is yes, then okay, I'm going to do it. Because like you said, it's just the conditioning that I've had. Versus if somebody has said, go be a stripper or something. Well, no, that's honestly something I wouldn't do it, because why? I value myself differently. Not saying they're not valuable, but I value myself differently. And if one of my question is, would I be okay if my son found out? The answer is still no. So I'm like, okay, so that's something I wouldn't do. Kind of like my own process of unconditioning myself.
Yeah. I think that's a very good method, honestly. It's a good thought process to come up to a decision. And I think it's a good way to like uncondition yourself and thinking about like how it will affect some people around me, how it will affect your son. I think it's a very, very good practice. I've read something about that because I was taking like, it's like in law, because we have to take law classes and they talk about it when you have to make a decision. And they talk about, okay, think about how people around you will. They were talking about ethics. This is what they were talking about. They were talking about ethics. And they were saying, like, if you are facing an ethical dilemma, these are some ways that you can really come up with a solution. And they were talking about what you have just said, like, how will someone around me feel about it? They were thinking, what will be the consequences in the society? So that was the way they were coming up with the solution. And it's very similar to what you have just mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though I didn't have children, when I started thinking this way, I always felt like, what if I do? And maybe it's not going to hurt me right now because I'm young and single and I have no kids. But in 10 years, if it came out, will I be okay with it? And that's when I would kind of prevent myself. Also, when it comes to speaking, if the person I'm speaking about would ever hear this conversation, because sometimes you think, oh, they're never going to know, or they're not here, they're never going to hear it. Okay, but if they did, would I be okay saying what I'm saying? And that helped me, like the whole gossiping and things like that. I'm like, oh yeah, like, well, if the answer is yes, go ahead, say it, Vanessa. But if the answer is no, just be careful. Don't even go there. So
yeah. We're always learning, I feel like.
Learning. Yes. What is one thing you would want the listeners or women everywhere to take so far from this conversation? Or from you, from your experience?
I would probably want them to dream big and to follow their dreams. I think that sometimes we're so conditioned by following what society tells us to do that we are sacrificing ourselves, our own happiness to make other people happy. But it's okay to put ourselves first. I think it's important to have that form of self-love for ourselves, which is like, I'm a big supporter of self-love. I think that if you are an amazing friend to someone, why are you not that kind of friend to yourself? So I would say, like, dream big, follow your dreams, have compassion to yourselves.
For someone who's, for example, have never done that or don't even know where to begin, what would you say? Like, start with what? What would be one small actual action step they can take to start with?
So I love journaling. I think prompted journals are a very good way to reflect on you. And some of them, they do have very good questions. And some of them are actually designed to help you to be that kind of person that you want to be. So I think one small, tiny step would be really to start journaling. Yeah.
I love it. So I have my journals. Yes, I started journaling because of therapy, but from
Yes.
there it made a world of a difference, and I still do it to this day. I love it. You said the way you end your day is with journaling or a workout, and I'm like, oh, that's the best way. Honestly, it really is.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Yes, that's awesome. I know you have a meeting pretty soon.
Yes.
Do you want to end now? We can end now. We can probably do this again sometime soon because I have still so many questions for you.
I love that. I'll say you don't look like you're 38. Today I'm meeting all these women who are telling me I'm in my 40. I'm like, what?
This is happening. Yeah, I'm
You don't look.
38. I thanks to the Botox. Not
You look pretty young, let me tell you this.
thank you.
Hollering.
No, I think it's our skin color, our the way we are. I think it's the best thing ever.
I don't know if it's the jeans or something, but
Definitely the
I'm
jeans.
not. Yeah, and I could hear your Spanish accent when you speak in English a little bit. It comes out a little bit, and I love it. I
Oh,
love
okay.
it.
Gracias. Amor, gracias. I tried. I never knew I had one until I stopped going to Mexico for like 10 years. When I went back, everybody would tell me I had an accent, and I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't hear it, but thank you.
It comes out a little bit, and I feel like it just makes your English accent more authentic and unique.
Oh, thank you. I love it. I'll take it.
Okay, let me know when you're ready. I'll take the pick. One, two, three. Okay, I took like,
Oh, okay, good.
you're so cute. You're so cute.
Thank you. Big thank you to the beautiful, brilliant, and endlessly inspiring Yurmi for joining me today. She brought the wisdom and the vibes, and honestly, even my son knew it was a moment because he had to make his little cameo. If you love this conversation, make sure you share it with someone who needs this kind of unicorn magic. Don't forget to follow the podcast and come hang out with me on my Instagram at unicornsdoexistpod. That's for all the behind the scenes, chaos, and magic lives. And remember, unicorns do exist. You, my love, are listening to one. See you on the next one.